Shooting it raw?
Yes. Shooting it raw. That's my question. I love it. So the pictures are taking a moment in time, saving them forever, and it'll change the next second. And so what I love about photography and taking a picture is that it freezes that moment in time, and in 5 years, 10 years, or some point down the road, you can look at that picture and bring back memories of that event and whatever it was that you took a picture of. So it's a snapshot in time, literally, and it can transport us back in time too.
Nice. Tim Egebratten, is that how I say your name?
Perfect, yeah.
Okay. Look, nice to meet you. You're in some kind of office space of sorts, and behind you, yep, it says, I am, I can, I will. Very aspirational, very kind of, your energy is very like awake, full on, here you are. Nice to meet you.
Good to meet you too. And a lot of it's a choice, right? I mean, our attitudes are, yeah, a choice. We can't control the stuff that's going on around us, but we can control how we show up. We can control a lot of that. We forget that sometimes, but so I try to embrace that, and I try to embody that motto, I am, I can, I will. My mom used to tell us that all the time, and so she kind of drilled it into us at a young age, and just that whole attitude of, you know what, yeah, this is potentially a big challenge in front of us, but we're going to get through it. We are going to get through it. We can get through it. We will get through it. And so that's kind of how, nice, I take on all my challenges.
So where in the world are you right now?
Minnesota, Detroit Lakes, Minnesota, US of A. So kind of northwestern part of the state of Minnesota, and about 230 miles northwest of Minneapolis, Minnesota, up in far North Dakota.
So the episode just before yours happens to be with Brent Olson, who's also in Minnesota. So Minnesota, oh, nice, represent.
Woo! You know what that means? That means that this is the year the Vikings are going to win the Super Bowl. Minnesota Vikings. Okay. Yep. We've never won a Super Bowl. Yeah. It's got to be one of these years.
Okay. So here's the photo. Okay. Okay. So it's a group shot with a large family. Not super huge, but okay. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. 10 people, 2 kids, 1 cat.
Yeah.
Shot outside in the fall, maybe. It's really interesting colors, all muted. So not very hot day. So kind of a cool spring fall day. Everybody's wearing like green, khaki, orange. Everybody's looking at the photographer, smiling. Really good looking family. You know, yeah, really nice. Great moment. Okay, so it's called, yeah, you called it family. So, mm-hmm, so what's this all about?
I was actually taken this winter, and we've had a very mild winter this year. Usually there'd be snow and it'd be bitterly cold. And so we've had a mild winter, and it was taken around Christmas time where our whole family got together. And one of our sons, my wife and I have 3 sons, and 2 of them are married. And the third one has a girlfriend, and she's in the picture also. And the youngest one and his girlfriend, for our Christmas present, gifted us a photography session.
Oh, nice.
That was one of our wishes, is to get the whole family together. It's very hard nowadays to get everybody together. And that was one of our wishes for a gift, would be if somehow we could all get together and get a picture. And nice. I even threw in my oldest son's cat, so make it complete. Nice.
So this is also in Minnesota. This is all like...
Yep, that's our backyard, yep.
Oh, nice. So here's the thing. Like I set up this podcast. This is going to be episode 197.
Nice.
I meet all these people. I believe we lined up because your agent, you may have written a book. And so it's for me, it's like, who are these people that I'm meeting? Like, who are you? So your energy is like direct. You're very switched on. You're like, yep, you're here. It's great. You send me this photo of your family. Okay, so of all the things you could have picked, you chose a picture of a group shot of your family.
Right.
Right? So the big question is why?
Because they are my why. They are why I do what I do. And you asked me that question to start off this podcast about what does photography mean to you? And that encapsulates everything that I get up for in the morning. And that is just it in that picture right there with all of those personalities, and it'll change. We're changing every second, you know, but at that moment in time, that was our family, and I love them all very much. And anything I can do to keep that family together and help them, and we all help each other. We're hopefully a little microcosm of what our society should be. You know, where we all have our strengths and our challenges, but we help each other. We complement each other very well, and so so that's. Yeah, that's a huge part of my life is that family of mine.
In between the lines of how people describe what's important to them,
right?
I get to sort of notice certain things, right? So family is very important to you, okay? Right. But also the choice of words, the fact that you have I am, I can, I will behind you. You're very action-oriented. You even have it on your mug, right?
Well,
it's a brand onto yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What's your calling? So the previous guest, he's an author. So I was like, okay, that's cool. But he is a farmer. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what about you? Like what world of expertise or knowledge or whatever do you inhabit?
When I was in kindergarten, so about 6 years old, I knew that I was going to be a police officer. I knew it.
Oh.
No question in my mind. And I have three older sisters. I'm the only boy and the youngest in our family, but I knew I was going to be a police officer. And so I became a police officer as soon as I got out of college. And I was police officer for just about 28 years, 25 years with one department, and became the chief of police for 5.5 years in our town. So that was, I came from a place of service, you know, where I wanted to serve my community. Yep. And, but then right before I retired from law enforcement, I was asked to speak with a larger police department and, talk to their command staff and about my leadership journey. And I did, and I love music. So I brought my guitar down there and I shared some music and some stories. And so right before I retired and left law enforcement, I found my second calling, and that was to speak, to share a message of positivity. I am, I can, I will. And to have that opportunity and the ability to share a message that, yeah, things are going to be crappy sometimes and not fun, but we have to remember to look for the beauty around us, and we forget about
it.
We get so caught up.
Nice.
So I've been blessed with two callings in my life, first law enforcement and now speaking. And so as kind of a natural offshoot of my motivational and inspirational speaking, people kept saying, you need to write a book, man. And I was like, I don't even know.
I don't know where to start.
Where to begin? So I began writing a book probably 6 years ago and just finished it, and it just came out, and I'm tickled pink about that whole thing. And it's just,
is that the name of the book?
The name of the book is called Find Your Beat, Walk in the Rhythm of Life. And
nice.
So I use that rhythm, and then that beat, as police officers, we walk a beat. And, so it's kind of a, you know, mixed meaning, but it applies to everybody that, hey, you know, what's your rhythm? And in Hong Kong, how are you going to find your rhythm? And people, wherever they're at, we need to find that our own rhythm of life. And And there's a lot of static and a lot of noise when in the media or our friend groups or at work, or, you know, we hear all that static coming in. So how do we filter that? Mm-hmm. You know, not by burying our head in the sands and being ignorant, but how do we balance it all and find that harmony and that rhythm in our life? And so the book was kind of a natural progression. Yeah. Just excited that, and again, these opportunities, I mean,
right.
I pinch myself. It's amazing. So thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you back. Look, we're going to connect as human beings, right? So first of all, we have many overlapping sections, in our lives, right? So for me, I've spent 15 years working with a very kind of renowned business leader who really looked at what is the nature of service. And then, so when you say you spent 25 years in law enforcement, mm-hmm. I mean, that is a kind of calling or work or where you put your energy that is service oriented. And for most people, when they think service, they think customer service, right? That's the idea, the immediate sort of association. Whereas what we'd say is service is the energy you bring to each other. Mm-hmm. Right. It's all it is like it service isn't necessarily commercial, but it's, for example, when you're an officer, your service is the energy between you and whoever you're talking to.
Right.
And we say that in a family, like I'm looking at this group photo of you guys, like you're all giving a service within your little network, your little tribe of people. Mm-hmm. And even a toddler gives a toddler service. Mm-hmm. And sometimes like a newborn service is like the worst. But that's exactly the service that newborn needs to give. And as parents and as siblings, you give each other that service. So that's where I'm coming in, sort of in terms of how I'm interfacing with you. Mm-hmm. And I'm not one to believe in fate and all this stuff. But in my biography, in my life, you know, ups and downs, right now is a very challenging moment. Mm-hmm. And here we are, we meet. And here's this really bright, activated, leadership sort of oriented fellow with I am, I can, I will. Look, great to meet you, Tim. Great to meet you. This is great.
Yeah, right back at you. I mean, I don't think things happen by accident. I really don't. I mean, that's a big mm-hmm. part of my mindset is somebody needs to hear something you're saying. And, you know, your podcast, I don't have any idea. And you don't know who's going to listen to it, you know. And
right, so exactly.
Somebody having the worst day of what they think is the worst day of their life, and they're driving to work and they put your podcast on the commute to work. And yep. Whoever your guest is and your conversation that you're having with your guest, it may be exactly what that person needs to hear right at that time. And you can't control that.
Exactly.
I can't control. We just keep showing up and you keep showing up at early in the morning. So sorry to wake you up too early.
No, it's all good. It's all good. Look, Tim, these things go really quickly. We have to leave your beautiful family. Great shot. And we will move on to the next photo. Oh, look at you. Okay, grandkids and book. Okay, so it's, you have a great energy about you. Really, really great. And obviously, that's what people, so in the work that we talk about in terms of service, you know, we say that the power of attraction and pull really radiates, and that's what people are drawn to, right? Yeah. So in this photo, I don't know if this is the professional photographer who got it, but it's a great photo of you sitting with your two grandkids, looking at books, really bright moment in could be an office room. Yeah, it looks more like an office room than a kitchen. You're seated on the floor. One of your grandkids looks like he's 2 years old and one is 3 years old, roughly. Yeah, great little moment.
Yeah.
What are you trying to say?
Well, that was taken by my daughter-in-law, and I had just received the first box of my books, and they live in Minneapolis. And so when my publisher sent me a message and said, I have your books, I said, can I come down and get them now? It's about a 3.5 hour drive for me.
Oh yeah.
And, but I was so excited. I was like a kid, you know, waiting for that present, you know? And so when she said they were ready, I jumped in the car and I drove down there. I picked up my books and I thought, well, I'm not going to open these. I'm not going to just open them by myself. I want to be with, and another one of my whys why I wrote a book is to keep my mom's legacy alive of I am, I can, I will. And then for those younger generations and my grandchildren, the oldest one is in the picture there. He's almost 4 and an avid reader, and they're reading books to him every day. And
nice.
And then the youngest one, the little guy is 1 year old. And
okay.
So that picture, the little 1 year old is clapping because he's all excited. I was excited. Yep. And the older one, you know, we're ripping open the box. And so again, that picture taken with an iPhone, I'm assuming, just froze a really exciting moment for me personally and professionally. And then those kids, they keep growing like crazy. They're getting older every day. And so that's the moment that grandpa opened the books, you know? And so I want them to look at that. I want them to look at my book when they're teenagers and read about grandpa's stories and grandpa's challenges that he had and how he got through different challenging times in his life. And so that's like, it was just a sweet picture that my daughter-in-law snapped at a really cool moment. And that's one thing with photography nowadays. We can search so readily our archives of pictures. It's just amazing. And to have that at our fingertips is so powerful.
Yeah. No, it really is. So you said that when you were 8, I think you said 8, you knew you wanted to be in law enforcement.
Probably even 6. Is that it? Yeah.
6. Okay. 6. Yeah. So interesting. Like if we see things, life, whatever, as being kind of not exact mirrored copies, but as kind of cyclical repetitions.
Mm-hmm.
So here, like in, you know, when you're 6 years old, sitting on the ground, looking at whatever it is, toys, books, whatever, can you remember if there was a thing that really, like an object or something that really kind of personified this idea of becoming a police officer? Or was it just the image? Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, no, and it was a picture. We were in Seattle, Washington, visiting my mom's cousin. And so I was probably 5 or 6 years old. And my mom's cousin's son, whom I've never met, but there was a picture of him on the table, and he was in uniform. He was a Washington State police officer. And I didn't know who he was, but I just saw him in uniform. But I remember like, wow, that's what I want to do. And at that the Vietnam War was still going on. It was just kind of finishing up. And so I don't think we watched TV a lot as kids, but I remember images of the Vietnam War and when our soldiers were coming back and the protests that were going on and the uniformed police officers. And I just remember seeing a lot of that images in my head. And when I saw he'd be a cousin of some sort of mine in uniform, I thought that's what I want to do. He looked proud. He looked courageous. He looked strong. Just in a picture.
Yeah. And so in a similar way, you got your 2 grandsons here who their interface with their grandfather is like, for them, all they know is, oh, their grandfather writes books.
Yeah.
And just wrote this. So again, the title of your book,
Find Your Beat, Walk in the Rhythm of Life.
Oh, I love it. Okay. So why don't you walk us through your book roughly? Like what are the themes? What are you trying to achieve in the book? Like what is the reader going to get?
My goal is when I'm speaking professionally and with the book and with everything, this this podcast. My goal is, yeah, I'm sharing my stories, but it has nothing to do with me. My goal is for the reader or the listener, or when I'm speaking, the people in the audience, to hear the stories of examples of mistakes that I've made, you know, trauma that I've experienced, and how that shaped me and affected me. But again, that's not about me. So I want them to take those stories, plug it into their life, and to say, you know what? If this guy went through 28 years of a really potentially toxic environment, you know, with always looking for the bad in people, and because mm-hmm. that was our job, we look for what people are doing wrong, not right. And if he can do that, that's what I want to do. So the book has stories of people that have impacted my life, like my father, my mother. There's a guy named Norman in the book that just a you know, at the time seemed like a random kind of a homeless individual, but he rocked my world. He just a kind and gentle man, and made me recognize that that my rhythm was off and I was really becoming toxic myself, and that it was us versus them. And everything was framed in that us, like my night shift partners and them was everybody else. And, and I'm looking at our world now and I see a lot of that us versus them, you know, whether it's political or countries or just our belief systems, we can really get wrapped up into that us versus them. And then, so it's stories and it's techniques and tactics that I've used through my life that have been modeled for me. And in the last 5 or 6, 7 years, I've been studying them, like from a, not really a psych, I'm not a psychologist, I don't pretend to be, but more from, you know, why do these techniques work? You know, like gratitude, you know, and, or meditation. Why does meditation work? And I came on to meditation very late in life, and but it, that was a game changer for me, you know. So So a lot of these techniques, and again, it's a short book. It's like 132 pages. People are messaging me from around the world. It's really crazy. They're like, you know, hey, I sat down and read your book in 2.5 hours, and they, you know, and they're telling me what hit for them. And it's just, it's so surreal knowing that, you know, somebody in Germany might be reading my book, or in the United Kingdom, or maybe Hong Kong. Yeah. You just, I mean, send me your address, brother.
I love it. Now, okay, just to not lose that for a second, you bump into this fellow named Norman. Right. You don't know him. I assume you sort of met him. What was the catalyst that created this sort of like change in thinking in you?
I think it was the timing of, I was really deep into that us versus them mindset where I thought the world was against us, the few guys that I worked with on nights, and I thought everybody was against us. And when I met Norman, he was, he thought he was in Detroit, Michigan, but he was in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. So it's about 900 miles apart. Wow. And he was clearly confused, but he wasn't a danger to himself or anybody else. But he was, I don't know if it was dementia or I don't really know, but he was a little confused. But just this kind and gentle man, skinny. And so I gave him a ride to a hotel and got him a hotel room for the night. We had a system in place for just for that. But as I was leaving, and he had these brown eyes that a lot of people, when they're talking about somebody that's impacted them, a lot of people talk about this person's eyes. And Norman's eyes were brown, and they were unlike anybody's. The way he looked at me was, nobody had ever looked at me like that before then or since then, but he was looking at me and it felt like he was looking into my soul. And as I was leaving, this was late at night, probably 2 o'clock in the morning. And as I was leaving him in his hotel lobby area, he said, wait a minute. And I turned around and I looked at him, and he looked at me locked on with those eyes. And it was uncomfortable. It was like, it seemed like a long time, but I know it was just a few seconds. Mm-hmm. And he said, I want to remember the people who have helped me. And I had no response. I didn't know what to say. I just broke my gaze with him, and I went and I sat in my police car, and I started to cry. And I was not a crier. I never cried. And but mm-hmm. you know, at that stage of life, I was this tough protector.
Yeah.
And it struck me, and it broke me down. And I remember thinking to myself, who have I become? Because that's right. The guy that I felt like I was becoming was not the guy that my mom and dad raised, and not the guy that wanted to be a police officer. But I was getting so crusty.
Mm-hmm.
But Norman, just by being himself, started to chip away at that crust of mine. And so I use his story a lot when I'm talking to people, that just what seemed to be a happenstance contact that we met each other, never saw him again. I go in detail in the book where I found him later, but he had died, and I found his gravesite. Oh. And that's a powerful story in itself. But but so here's this guy that I had probably half an hour, 30 minutes, you know, of contact with. And I think about him almost every day. And this is, I don't even know how many years ago, it was years ago. But the power that we have on affecting other people's lives just by showing up and our attitude, our energy, and not being that person that sucks all the excitement out of in a conversation or, because we all know those negative people too, but
sure.
So I refer to, that person was a Norman, or if she's female, like a Norma, that person really affected me. And we can be Normans and Normas for other people.
Wow. Tim. So as you say this delightful photo of you clapping hands, it mirroring your one-ish grandson.
Yeah.
Sitting by your new book, which is very exciting. Who would have thought 30 years ago that you'd have written a book talking to some dude around the other side of the planet about Norman?
Right.
Right? Like, it's amazing.
It is. It's too much to wrap our heads around.
Yeah. Aww. Okay. I love these. Okay, so... This happens in the episodes all the time where I say, look, pick four photos. They're going to frame what you want to talk about. And then, I get these windows into people's lives, and it's a treat, right? So you're in a desert, looks like, I don't know which one, Joshua Tree? No, but it looks like some kind of desert in Arizona or something.
Yep.
In the foreground, you're making a selfie. You and I guess that's your spouse, your wife?
It is. Yep, my wife.
Very nice. Yeah, both looking at the camera, smiling. Not like a crazy, insane smile, but just like a nice, warm, friendly smile. Could be morning in the desert, slightly overcast. Big, beautiful, I don't remember the name of those cacti, the very tall ones. And she's holding up your book, Find Your Beat. Great promo shot, I have to say. Like, I applaud that. Very, very well done. So, okay, I can almost guess why you added this photo. So why don't you tell the story?
Again, another why. My wife and I have been married 35 years in June, and we started dating like 8 years before that. So we've been together a long time. And so yeah, that's a saguaro cactus in in Mesa, Arizona. That's another. My wife is another big reason of why I get up in the morning, why I do what I do, and why all of that. And we've become such a good team. And so that was a promo picture. It was our local newspaper here wanted some pictures for an article they were running. And so we went out, and that's actually the draft copy of the book. So it's not even bound. And so it's a lot of excitement there with the book. And then sharing that, we when I was writing the book and when it was all ready to go and we were going to submit it to the publisher, we both hit send together, you know, my wife and I.
Oh, did. You guys are too cute.
But it's like, you know, I always say, you know, teamwork makes the dream work. And it's
nice.
It's not a cliche. It's real. And it's, so I wanted, when you asked for four pictures that, you know, kind of fill in a lot of parts of our lives. And that's, she's such a huge part. I could do, you know, 4,000 pictures of just her or her and I, or, you know, whatever. And, mm-hmm. and she's a great mom. She's a great wife. She's a great grandma and just a massive part of my life and couldn't do any of it without her. She's my glue and as many goof ups and mistakes as I've made. And she continues to stick with me and support me. It's just humbling and powerful.
No, for sure. I can see in your face. Well, there's this, I am very drawn to, because I have that sensitivity and that sensibility of just recognizing authenticity in others, right? Because of course, like when you, if you don't think of it and don't notice it, then it's like, you're like, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I happen to be the kind of person who hunts around for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, so in the image, it's a very authentic, genuine moment of you as a couple holding up the book. And then next to that is you in video talking about your relationship, talking about the energy between you two. Mm-hmm. And again, it's like there's that authenticity and, you know, and it's so interesting that within a couple of minutes of talking to you, I was just like, okay, so the word choices and how you frame yourself, I am, I can, I will behind you in mm-hmm. this large sort of framed motto. It's a very positive, constructive, action-oriented sort of, I don't know, like philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And also that seems to be the book, like of the all the books you could have written, this is the one that you put together, mm-hmm. right? And right. it's so you touched on this, and I think it's important for people to hear about the challenges and the failures, because, you know, it's because we all have to push through those moments, right? Yeah. So if you had to pick one, and it doesn't have to be the most challenging or the most epic, mm-hmm. but like, why don't you share a moment of failure and hardship that actually was a great lesson?
Yeah. That's a good question. So that was honestly probably the biggest barrier for me publishing this book, was that because I was very personal in the book. And actually, when I sent it to a writing coach and he sent me three chapters back, and I sat on it for 4 days and I thought, you know what? I don't even want a book. It was a good try. Let's not do it. But I was in such fear that what are people going to think? And so when I was 12 years old, I started drinking alcohol. And I discovered through my writing process in the last few years that alcohol, my relationship with alcohol was, in my opinion and my belief, it leveled the playing field. I'm very introverted in a lot of ways. And when I would drink, then I could communicate with anybody. And mm-hmm. When I was a police officer, I'd go to events. I felt like I was out of place. Like, I don't belong here. These people know way more than I do. But if I had a beer in my hand or a cocktail of some sort, it would level the playing field. And I feel the confidence to go up and speak with anybody. Mm-hmm. And then it just kept accelerating then, the use of alcohol. Then it was a numbing agent, you know, mm-hmm. when I would have trauma at work, and it just became more of, and I'm an entertainer. I do music and I'm a one man mm-hmm. band. And so a lot of my shows that I was doing, I was drinking during my shows, and it just became what I thought was part of my personality. Like, well, this is what I do. I drink. And then I was arrested for driving under the influence of alcohol about a year after I retired from law enforcement, less than a year. And, and so here, you know, the hypocrisy of all of that, you know, that here I dedicated my life to arresting people for violating laws and getting drunk and driving and stuff. And here I was driving drunk, you know, and mm-hmm. and so that my relationship with alcohol, and it stopped that day. I mean, I stopped drinking that day, but, and so I was thankful in the sense that I was able to just stop drinking. It wasn't like a physical addiction. And yeah, I can't even imagine people that do battle with physical addictions, because I didn't have any withdrawals or anything like that. It was all in my head. And yeah, I had people say, "Well, are you still going to be funny?" Like when I'm using shows, I'm like, "I don't know. You tell me.
We'll see."
Like, yeah, come to my show. But I thought it was part of my personality, you know, or part of who I was. And so separating them, like surgically separating alcohol from my shows and who I am, it wasn't nearly as tough as I thought it was going to be. And so that, but that was opening a lot of, like, pulling the curtains into our lives that I don't know if my wife was ready to, like, "Hey, you're pulling back the curtains on your life, you know," but it's also pulling back the curtains on her life, you know? So we were both very apprehensive about that. So since the book has been out, I've had people say, "You know what? Thank you for being strong." And I'm thinking, I'm the weakest guy on the planet, you know, but by me being, like, vulnerable, I guess is one of the catchwords nowadays, but by me being vulnerable and saying, "You know what? Hey, I am not going to throw any stones because I have screwed up more than anybody." And that's really given a lot of people opportunities then to say, "Well, if Tim Agerbrotten owns his mistakes and tries to do better the next day, maybe I can," you know? And so that's like my whole, again, it's not about me or my stories and nothing to do with me. But if I can share that part of me that from 12 years old to 50 years old, 51 almost, this relationship with alcohol, and if I can share that, and if that helps somebody, well, I'm all in, you know? That, I mean, what else is there?
No, it's great. It's totally great. And I think, you know, I mean, as children, you're trying to figure out what is the recipe, what is the root, what is the formula that can help me cope, right? And for some kids, if they're, you know, surrounded by the opportunity to drink or the culture of drinking or whatever, or just stumble into that, that can kind of take over. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and it's a very common, it's an extremely common reflex for many people. And then that whole question of, like, well, you know, it's like, can I let loose without having that excuse or whatever of saying, "Well, you know, I was drinking so I can be more, you know, drinking makes me more extroverted."
Right.
Well, it's like, okay, now you have to be more extroverted without the alcohol. And look, you can do it.
Yeah.
Right. It was just like, it was there all the time.
Absolutely. Yep. Exactly. And it wasn't my identity. You know, I felt like it was, but then some people feel like their career is their identity also. And so I think we have to kind of keep flipping that mirror around on ourselves and, like, well, who am I? What is my identity? Mm-hmm. And I'm more than a retired cop. You know, I'm a husband, I'm a dad, I'm a grandfather, I'm a musician and an entertainer and author, you know. I mean, we're all more than, but we do that as people. We see somebody else and we think we know everything about them just by where they're at, how they look, what they're wearing. You know, if it's religious material, you think, "Oh, I know everything about that person." We don't know squat.
And then through a happy accident, you happen to lock eyes and you think, "Norman,
right?
Look at you."
Yeah, we have way more in common with each other than we have, like, differences. And we're all going to have differences.
Yeah.
And hopefully it would be pretty boring if we were all identical.
Yeah. So how about, like, because one school of thought, you know, if we're talking about motivational and leadership and guiding other people, is this idea that we're shaped by our wounds, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can have these great successes and you go, "Oh, that's great." But usually a success, you take it and you go, "Oh, that feels pretty good for like 15 minutes. And then you're like, you file it away. But a wound, you know, a trauma, a hurt can sometimes really live on, right? So is there a wound that happened early on as an officer that was almost a burden that you carried with you that eventually you thought, hey, you know what? I don't need that either.
In my frame back here, I have that I am a can at will. And then there's a picture right there of one of my partners. And he was one of the first people we met when we moved here to this town. And he got hired on the police department shortly after I did. And about 10 months after I became chief of police, he took his own life. And so that was a trauma that, so I did that what if game, you know, like, should I have seen something? You know, we beat ourselves up when somebody dies by suicide. And so that I wrestled with that a long time, you know, where it was like, what did I miss? Was it something I said? Was it my fault? You know, and all of these different pieces. So his death really took a lot of the wind out of my sails. It was like, what am I even doing in this career? And am I capable of leading this agency? And then, but as time went on and as I repressed that, then I discovered probably 6 or 7 months after his death, I discovered that I'd had an entire career of repressing every single trauma. And I never talked to I never talked to my wife about any of that. And everything was, hey, okay. And I'd have another beer, you know, because I was always that guy that everything's sunshine and lollipops. And so his death, when I came to a realization that I probably wasn't right in my head, that I was seeing videos and I was having trauma that I hadn't dealt with ever. And so all of these, my 20 whatever years of police experience up until that point, was all trauma undealt with. And so it was bubbling over. And so I went in, I saw a psychologist, and that's when I discovered mindfulness and meditation and sitting with those images and those memories and not pushing them away and dealing with them in a healthy way. And so I think that his death, you know, again, the timing of it was never a good timing for it. And it just rocked me so hard that it's like, okay, well, now what? You know, so the ball's in my court. What am I going to do with it? You know, and do I hit it back? Or, you know, how am I going to handle this? And so that I am, I can, I will, you know, proved very powerful that, you know what? And I'm not going to do it myself. You said it before. I mean, this whole community of life, we're not designed to do this by ourselves. And so I reached out and I got help, recognized first that, I need help. So that was a big first step. And then getting the help and then following through with it and continuing with it, you know. And so now it's a continual daily, you know, am I going to let things stress me out? And nobody's going to make me mad. You can't make me mad. You can't make me anything. I control all that. So.
Yep. Tim, you just ladled a massive soup pot of knowledge.
My job, brother.
Thank you. Let's move on to the next photo. I am, I can, I will. Boom. Okay, great. So this is a photo made from within an audience in a, reception hall of sorts. There may be 100 people in the audience seated at the chairs and tables. It could be a seminar, hard to know. On the stage, on the right side of the photo is a man wearing nice shoes and jeans, a jacket, holding up a guitar. Standing there, I don't know if you're in the middle of a song. The audience is kind of all facing you, and it's an interesting, if you think about what that is, that's a really weird sort of moment where you have like a room full of 100 people. They're all looking forward at this one person with a guitar that's making funny sounds, either coming out of his mouth or coming out of this object. and entertaining them. So, yeah. So this is either a speaking engagement or you're just entertaining with a song. What is this?
Yeah, speaking engagement. And I think how you framed the questions in your email, like when I was selecting the pictures, I think it was, you know, one of the frames was like what you're doing now or what drives you now or something. I don't remember how you mm-hmm. worded it, but so I wanted to get a picture of me doing what I do now, speak, and I use music because we ride this roller coaster of emotions when I'm speaking, and we cover a lot of topics. We talk about suicide and we're laughing 1 second and singing, and because I want it to be very memorable for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So when
mm-hmm.
I incorporate music into it, that makes it a little maybe more different than other speakers. And
it's another layer.
Exactly. Sure. So they're looking at this guy, and I usually start out my keynote presentation with a song. And so they introduce me, and I come out onto the stage with my guitar, and they're thinking, they're looking at their programs like, who's this guy? And on,
nice,
you know, says like, oh, he was a retired police chief, and watch, got some built-in credibility, maybe or maybe not, but sometimes they're forced to be there, like their boss told them to be there. And
yeah,
I don't remember what audience that one was, but they're all very similar in that they're sitting there. And like you said, it is a weird moment for 60 to 75 minutes. They're yep. watching me, you know, and like, what's he going to talk about? And so I approach those opportunities with reverence because mm-hmm. these people are giving up 60 to 75 minutes of their day or afternoon or evening. And I don't want to drop the ball. I'm getting this golden opportunity to share some message that, again, like you and I talked about, somewhere somebody might really need to hear that right now.
Yeah.
And so I approach each presentation, I approach each podcast interview with the same like mindset of, I don't know what I need to hear today. And I don't,
yeah.
I just know that I've been given breath and I've been given a voice. And if I can say something or talk about something, and you're masterful at this, asking the questions and teasing that out of people. So hats off to you, my brother, for...
Oh, thanks.
Oh, yeah. And your whole mission of this, of, what did you say, 197 or...
episode, yeah. Episode 197, yeah.
So, I mean, that's showing consistency. You're showing up and you're doing it. And it's so... With that in mind, so I wanted to get a picture of me speaking because that's what's fueling me right now. I'm 57 yeah. years old, and I don't see an end to this. I mean, as long as I have breath in my body and I can croak out some words and play mm-hmm. that guitar, and music has another way of too of like looking at a photograph. You can hear a song that will instantly in your mind bring you back to the first time you heard it, your first love, your first heartbreak, whatever. And music has
absolutely
enormous power. And so I start out with an original song called I Am, I Can, I Will. I am.
I love it.
And so then and then I just like tie it all in. And but it's that power of the platform, we call it in speaking, that like, man, I don't want to squander this, and I don't want to just, you know, hurt somebody with my words. I can hurt somebody a lot easier than I can help somebody. And so I'm very deliberate about my mission, my goal, and I want to help. I don't want to knock people down.
What is in the water that you're drinking? What's with Minnesota, water. Man?
Yeah.
What is in Minnesota?
I don't know, man.
No, you have to talk about that. Sorry. Look, as a person who lives on the other side of the planet, I grew up in Montreal, right? Born in Jerusalem, born in Israel. But there's something really wholesome and so this is the whole thing of service, right? Service is the energy given at 3 feet. Like we say 1 yard away. It's like service is when you're in front of a person like Norman, you know, mm-hmm. it's just like... in that moment where you're just looking at each other, that energy between you two, that is a life-changing service or a life-changing moment, right? And so in that audience, you're on stage and they say, okay, listen, buddy, you have an hour.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
And you look at your life and you curate this story that you, you know, you punctuate with song. And so talk about, so what is the, was there a time when somebody from that audience came to you and looked at you, you know, like you were their Norman. They looked at you in the eyes and you did something to them that just moved their world, right? Yeah. So did you have a moment like that?
Every time. So I've been doing professional speaking for about 6 years now. And after every presentation, at least one person, sometimes there's a line of people that come up and they just start, like dumping on me. And I love it. And I again, I cherish that because that's telling me that I've been vulnerable. And, and I don't remember you mentioned it, but you see people. You have a sensitivity, I think is the word you use to when you see people. And somebody after one of my presentations came up and they told me, you are an empath. And I'm like, what now? And, and so I think, and I know my mom, she instilled that in me. And I think I got some of her DNA obviously, but she was so good at seeing people, like seeing them. And whatever it was about them, she could see if somebody was hurting, and she might not have known what the hurt was, but she had the ability to go up and start, like maybe they needed a hug or a little piece of food or something. Uncanny. I watched her do that so many times, and I'm thankful that I have some of that in me, that when people come up afterwards and then they'll start unloading on me these just like traumatic experiences or like, sir, I have to tell you, you've changed my life. And I'm like, who am I? Who am I? Amazing. Why are you saying that? You know? And, but again, it's with humility and I'm saying, oh my gosh, you know? And so usually when I'm on the road and I'm speaking and I get done speaking, it's emotional anyway. And people come up and they start unleashing. And after about 20 minutes of after everything's done, I'm out. I'm down for the count. And and I need to recharge. And that's where the introvert in me says, okay, get away from people for a couple hours. And it's the older I get, and hopefully as we age, we hopefully get wiser. And the older I get and hopefully the more wiser I become, I recognize that each one of us has been given a gift. 100% of us have some kind of a gift. And we need to share those gifts with somebody else, because squandering them and not sharing our gifts, whatever it is, if our gift is listening, if our gift is a joke, you know, once in a while, whatever it is, if we're not sharing those gifts, we're doing whatever gave us those gifts a disservice, and we're doing ourselves a disservice. And so that's kind of the mission I'm on. That is the mission I'm on right now, to kind of just be more bold about it. And, but in a subtle way, you know, I don't want to get preachy, and I don't feel like I am getting preachy. So I caution myself on that not everybody's going to have the same political or religious views. And honestly, I want to strip all that away, because none of it matters. And I want to get down to the way my mom did it. And when she would see somebody and she could see it in their eyes, or just the way they are carrying themselves, that this person's having a bad day. And when I'm in an airplane, and so when you give me your address, I am going to send you a book, and I'm going to send you one of my challenge coins. And I'll be on an airplane, and I'll just say, you know, how's your day going? And once in a while, they'll be like, awful, you know, or they'll start crying, you know? And then, so then I give them a coin. And when they get a coin and they look at it and they're like, you know, that's the nicest thing anybody's ever done to me. Yeah. But again, it all goes back to my mom, and then I'm sure her mom, and you know, because she got it from somewhere. And
nice.
When you ask me what's in the water in Minnesota, I don't know that I haven't traveled enough to know like what it's like in Hong Kong.
Now, you know, that I do I remember her name? I'm really not great with names, but I had a fantastic guest on the podcast. And she, maybe she's from Minnesota for all I know, she would give out these nuggets of hope, right? So she'd find little pebbles and then she'd paint on them nugget of hope. And then she'd walk around the city and she'd see somebody and she'd be like, I don't know your story. I don't know what's going on in your life, but this is just for you. Just a little nugget of hope. And yeah, that could totally change a person's life.
Yeah.
Tim. Respect. I am, I can, I will. I mean, you are, you do, and you did. Like, well done, man.
Thank you.
Love it.
Thank you.
Oh, this is so good. Look, it's been a real pleasure. You see, already it's been an hour.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity again. Thank you for your service, what you're doing. You're showing up, you're consistent, and you're rocking it, man. Good job.
Thank you. Look, have a very good evening.
Shooting it raw?
Yes. Shooting it raw. Hey, baby, I like it.